Battlefield, XCOM.
Okay.
LPC.
Okay.
Logan.
Okay. Okay. We're recording.
Okay.
Hello.
Am I talking into the back of the microphone?
You sounded fine.
Check, check. Nope.
You sounded
this
perfect.
This is it.
Yep.
So, you're fine.
Cool.
This is PC Gamer Podcast number 365.
We made it.
There's now one PC Gamer Podcast. Every day. I'm clearly rusty. Let's do that again. This is PC Gamer Podcast number 365. I'm Evan Lotti, Executive Editor at PC Gamer Magazine, joined by
Tyler Wild, Senior Associate Editor.
Sick and wild. Corey Banks, Managing Editor.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
It's been way too long.
Holy crap.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't even remember how microphones work anymore.
Yes. No. So, off the bat, we're so sorry that we took a unintentional, accidental hiatus from the PC Gamer Podcast. We were deprived. It's very sad. But we're back now, and we're glad to be. And, yeah, I just want to, you know, briefly explain that I was on vacation. We were traveling. Some huge reviews hit.
Yes.
Let's see, Battlefield, Call of Duty, XCOM. There was something else.
MechWarrior.
You guys did a cover story. I did MechWarrior, EverQuest cover story.
Yep.
Coming soon. Very exciting.
Yeah, yep. I don't have an excuse. I would come and sit in the studio and sit in front of the microphone and no one would come over.
Yeah.
And you guys were doing big, important stuff and going
well,
on vacations.
Well, Corey, you and I both went down to San Diego to hang out with SOE for a couple
right?
days. That was cool.
Got to build things in EverQuest Next.
Extremely
landmark.
Cool. I can't wait to read that. I haven't read it yet.
Right.
And we should mention that if you follow Logan Decker on Twitter, you know that Logan has moved on from being editor-in-chief of PC Gamer. He's moved on to a company called Dialect here in San Francisco with
us.
We're doing like custom publishing and stuff like that, which is really cool. So, I mean, he's been with our company with us and Max PC, I believe, for 14 years.
Wow.
It's an amazing tenure at PC Gamer. I mean, we're totally glad that Logan's found a cool position. We're sad to see him move on, but we're going to be doing some cool stuff in the coming year.
We did inherit all of his Nerf guns
and his squirrel pals that are still scurrying and
scurrying around his desk drawers
and our air ducts and whatnot.
Also,
but,
so there was some weirder stuff too that we pulled out of there. I wonder if the violet wand stuck around.
I'm afraid to find out. I feel like I'm going to find out like because you guys are going to find it and then attack.
Yes, probably.
Yeah, so Logan regrets they can't send his farewell on the podcast, but please get in touch with them on Twitter if you happen to be on Twitter and let them know how much you miss him, how much you admire him, and so forth. So yeah, one of those cool things that I mentioned that we're going to be doing that we have already done that we just did.
What?
Past tense. Did, done.
Do.
To be done.
Did, done, do.
And part of the reason, honestly, that we were unable to podcast reliably was we launched this project called the Large Pixel Collider. So if you go to lpc.pcgamer.com, you will see this enormous, ridiculous, multi-$1,000 computer that we built.
The most powerful, dangerous gaming PC known to man.
Yeah, I believe.
And it was benevolent enough to let us come and podcast today, which is nice.
We're using a couple different hyperbolic ways of describing it, such as calling it like uncomfortably powerful.
I really like that you used in the article. Uncomfortably, irresponsibly.
It's
I
just
also like
irresponsibly powerful.
I can't
is good.
Sit still. It's just so yeah. Go read all about this amazing computer we built. We're going to be using it to do a bunch of cool experiments on PC because hey, we're PC gamers. We can do what we want. We can build this insane thing that's irresponsible and dangerous. But you know, long story short, it's got four GTX Titans in it. And those are about a grand a piece. So we're quad SLIing some of the best video cards in the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 64 gigabytes of RAM. We really went all out with this thing. We're going to continue to upgrade it over time. We're going to continue to release videos on our YouTube channel. So it's a huge, huge, huge project for us. Put a lot of time into it from a lot of people in our company and ourselves. So it would mean a lot to us if you guys check that out and continue to follow it.
Go take a look at the Arma 3 video that we released with it because it runs Arma 3 with everything maxed at 1440p in the most glorious way possible.
Yeah, that's pretty bonkers. So Yeah, again, we're going to continue to sort of use it to render high-resolution gameplay footage, put it online, and show it to you. That's pretty
4K,
exciting.
4K,
5K. Yeah, we're going to work our
all
way.
All the Ks.
We're going to work our way up in resolution as we upgrade and as we keep testing and things like that, and we'll keep you guys abreast of that. So, really cool project that we're super excited about, super glad to share with you. We're sorry that the podcast had to sort of take a back seat while we were working on this crazy mad science project, but it's out the door. We're back. Hello.
Hello.
Let's talk about video games.
Oh.
God, where do we even begin? There are so many to talk about now.
Well, we have to start at the beginning.
First,
there was Space
Pong.
War.
Yeah. Why don't we start with Call of Duty?
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're the only one who's played it.
That's understandable.
I was on vacation when it came out, away from my computer.
Yeah, I reviewed it. Yes. 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't a totally favorable review.
You gave it 2 bananas out of cucumber.
Yes.
Right.
But you know, it's as always a wonderfully produced game. Looks really good. Didn't have too many technical issues, although some people were saying that they did. I didn't notice that, just frame rate drops in the menus, but the campaign it's a Call of Duty TM campaign.
How did you describe it? What was the name that you gave the campaign?
Well, the name I gave it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I described it as being like on a ride.
You called it Ghost Dad.
Oh, Ghost Dad. Yeah, I mean, it is, you find out your dad is a ghost.
Right.
In it, but not a ghost, you know, ghost, but a super soldier ghost. It's really cheesy,
the first military, like, first-person shooter that's had daddy issues in such a bad way.
Yeah.
Really? That's it?
I mean, the last one kind of did.
Yeah.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, no, they. I think they all...
I don't make it through the single-player campaigns that often.
It's got to be some kind of paternal issues at play. But yeah, I actually like the setting and the plot setup, and there are some really beautiful, beautifully rendered sort of loading cutscenes that I really, really like the presentation of, like really stylized. But the actual like dialogue and characters are pretty terrible. Like it opens up and like... you and your brother are sent on this, like, by your dad on this, like, horribly dangerous mission you probably won't come back for. And then, like, and then you get back to where you were, and, like, the Federation is, like, this new superpower that overtook South America and is now attacking America. And they're attacking, like, I think you're in San Diego at first. And you think you're like, you're looking for your dad because you just got back from this dangerous mission he sent you on. And then, you know, you're in this building, it's collapsing, and then, you know, someone comes down and grabs you and gets you in a helicopter, and they're like, no, we gotta find Dad, and then he takes his mask off, it's Dad.
Dad?
Dad is actually a ghost super soldier.
This already sounds like 4 different Hollywood blockbuster movies.
And then there's really just a moment where he's just like,
sup,
all right,
bros?
Boys, you got a lot to learn, but you passed the test. You're ghosts now. And, like, hands them their ghosts.
Is that really what he says?
Yeah, no, that's really what he says.
Oh, my God.
Like, you passed the test. Like, the test was, like, almost getting your sons killed. And, like, no, now you can be cool soldiers like me. Oh. And then of course, there is an ex-ghost who has gone to the other side and hates them.
He hates all ghosts. He's a ghost hunter.
He's a phantom.
I think they actually call him
do they that. Really call him a ghost hunter?
Or they say he's
Buster?
Hunting the ghosts.
I mean, come on, Buster.
Can we sit here and just script the next Call of Duty? Because I feel like we're so close to nailing this formula.
But basically, my criticism of the campaign is that, as it usually is, it's a lot of really beautiful set pieces and like really cool ideas for a mission that you never really get to enjoy as a player. I mean, you get to enjoy seeing it and aiming and shooting with some fairly varied guns, but it's really like just kind of pop-up gallery after pop-up gallery. You're never really asked to make a tactical decision. You turn it up to hard difficulty. Okay, you die in fewer shots now. So you're even more likely to just kind of like be going pop-up out of cover.
There was one set piece I was watching you play for your review, and you were playing on a gorgeous machine at the time. The scene in space.
Yeah, there's two of those. Looks, spoiler, I guess, if you
Well, worried. You mentioned it in your review. That's why I'm bringing it up. But it looked
I loved it.
Awesome.
I loved the space stuff. If the whole thing had been in space, I think I would have been more favorable. It was like playing Gravity with guns.
It looked really cool. So fantastic, and it looked like it was actually fun to navigate around in that space.
It was,
too.
Actually. I really liked that, and actually that was like the most freedom of movement I had in the campaign. But, you know, there are a lot of stuff where it's like, okay, now you're piloting an Apache helicopter. But the helicopter is kind of like this hoverboard that, you know, doesn't really, it's just like, you know, use a key to lock on, you have infinite missiles, blow up all the things, which is fine and fun. It's kind of, it was kind of like a modern, I don't know, what's the game I'm thinking of? Helicopter?
Desert Strike?
Yes.
Comanche? I don't know.
Yeah, Desert Strike is what I was thinking of. It's like a modern Desert Strike, which is like cool. Pretty fun. But, you know, again, it's just a series of these sort of action vignettes where, you know, you're not really making decisions, sort of like playing an arcade shooter, like almost on rails, like almost to the point of being on rails, which is fine, but it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's tough to sort of rate it highly as an experience when I really didn't feel the interactivity was as important to it as showing me spectacle. But
sure, yeah. How'd you feel about the multiplayer?
The multiplayer, I wasn't very favorable on either. It's such a cliche. If you like Call of Duty multiplayer, you'll probably like this Call of Duty multiplayer. But I feel like it's a step backwards from Black Ops 2. It really... I don't know. The levels are kind of drab. They add new modes. None of them really work very well. And as of now, I tried playing over the weekend, like the more divergent sort of different modes that you can't get into a playlist. No one is playing them because everyone in Call of Duty goes and plays Team Deathmatch, mostly Team Deathmatch, I think.
Why do you think that is?
They like the simple sort of skill test. But... I don't know, it moves so fast.
Yeah.
For me, too fast. That's not to say, like, I don't like it because I'm not good at playing Call of Duty. I played Modern Warfare, like, every night for the first Modern Warfare for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was okay at it. I'm not great at it. But it's so fast, I just don't feel like there's any rhythm to the matches that you get in almost every other multiplayer shooter. I don't get the sense of, like, I'm going to develop a rivalry with someone over the course of this, or I'm going to have just a really great moment that makes the whole match feel good.
Sure.
It really is, you know, spawn and then make about 5 snap decisions and then probably die. That's not to say fast snap decisions are a bad thing, but like I said, the whole thing, that maybe the matches need to be longer.
No.
Maybe the maps need to be designed less to funnel people in circles and given a little more character.
Yeah, I mean, speed isn't the only trait because Tribes is fast and Quake 3 is super fast. Unreal Tournament 2004 is super fast.
Yeah.
But they do have pace. You know, they do have a flow and you have a sense of like, I'm owning this map or like, I have to catch up to this other player who's owning the rocket launcher in this area or something.
I'm sure there are people who feel some of that playing it, but I don't feel like the game does anything to help generate that experience. So that's sort of my criticism of it. You know, I mean, I could go into detail on, like, the new soldier custom. I think the customization is getting out of control with the soldiers. And, like,
sure.
Now they've got, you can get, like, offensive kill streaks where you get an attack dog or you get, you know. And they've toned those down, actually, which I appreciate. So it's not like someone just starts bombing the hell out of you constantly. But now you can get, like, more passive kill streak rewards, like, that give you, like, passive stat boosts or give your team stat boosts. I mean, that's interesting. There's just so much choice. I don't know.
Very strategic choices, though. Like, it's something you can choose one way or another, but, like, it's not like you're coordinating with your team to figure out.
And in the end, you're running around in circles shooting at each other. And so I feel like there's something to be said for maybe simplicity on that end. I feel like, actually feel, again, like, I hate to keep, like, making it seem like the golden child, but Modern Warfare really struck the right balance between, like, you know, how many weapons there are to unlock and how many, you know, sort of other tangential equipment and perk sort of things there were, and I felt like I could really get a grasp on, like, I had to make a harder decision between what I wanted because there weren't that many to mix and match. And there's also, to some extent, I'm not going to, like, score it lower because it feels the same as all Call of Duty multiplayer. I'm not going to score it lower because it hasn't changed enough necessarily. Mm-hmm. If it's still a good game, it's a good game. But, you know, it doesn't feel modern, like a modern shooter anymore. And I feel like they have the opportunity, or they need to take the opportunity soon to really, you know, start fresh with something because, yeah.
Like Titanfall. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's something. That would have been an interesting. Yeah. It's like they understand that they have a huge audience of people who don't want it to change, and that's fine. But I think they could probably stand too soon, you know, start making some changes. It's starting to feel like a sports game, kind of, where it's like you update the roster every year.
Ooh, good analogy. Right.
And, like, you make the graphics a little better.
But nothing really changes.
Yeah,
those annual franchises, that it's a scary prospect. I'm curious, you know, based off of your feedback of Call of Duty Ghosts, how you would then, would you echo many of the same sentiments as you're talking about, if you're talking about Battlefield 4, which, I mean, mm-hmm. spoiler, I actually dig a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too.
Not that I'm any good at it, but, like, that's the kind of multiplayer I want to play. But your review of it, which you can read on PCGamer.com, also kind of talks about how it may not be different enough from Battlefield 3.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I think I wrote in the review, like, if you... The most cynical thing you could say about Battlefield 4 is it's like a big map pack or something.
Yeah.
Probably because the maps are, like, one of the best things about it. But hey, like, you know, there's also the if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't change it, you know. The infantry level stuff, there's a few refinements. They have stuff like cantered iron sights and, like, double optics and, like little magnifiers you can attach. Yeah, and toggle on and off and things like that.
I could definitely see a counter argument to my take on Call of Duty that it isn't broke if so many people love playing it, so they shouldn't change it. In the case of Battlefield 4, I react more positively to what they did. I mean, I think the maps are pretty significantly, as you talked about a lot in your review, a pretty huge improvement.
Yeah, but in general, I mean, as a reviewer, it's like, one of our golden rules is games do not release in a vacuum. So if something is purely sort of a content swap, if, you know, I don't think of Battlefield 4 that way, but if, you know, if it completely was or something, if it was just genuinely new maps, same mechanics, you know, like improvements to, you know, it didn't have, like, its Levolution thing and whatnot, we can talk about that. I mean, that if you're saying, okay, you're already a Battlefield 3 player, that experience is going to be a little bit stale. You know, it might be at first interesting and fun and novel, but it's going to age more rapidly than Battlefield 3 did for you just naturally because you've already gone through all those motions. You know how to shoot down helicopters. You've already ranked up the weapons. A lot of the weapons are the same and identical in BF4, which I don't have a huge objection to. And they're going to release some new ones through DLC, which is a little sneaky. But anyway, in general, I've been playing it very intensely lately. With a group of about between like 5 and 7 guys. A squad is 5, so a squad plus a couple more. Some of the Games Radar guys. And it's been terrific. Like, we all get on Skype, and we just roll around. We say, okay, we're focusing on this control point, we're focusing on that control point. And it's a great little, like, adventure filled with spectacle. I mean, filled with, like, just Battlefield's ability to, just through its raw, like, texture quality, audio quality, to give you these incidental moments of, like, wow, that just happened, you know, where you're running from A to B and a jet just screams in front of you 2 feet away from you and just blows up and you're fine and you just keep sprinting through the rubble and you go about your business. Like, the incidental things that happen are beautiful and it's hard for a multiplayer game that is unscripted to do that. Now, there are, Levolution is one of the scripted elements of sort of that spectacle and beauty. It's sort of
a part of me dies every time you say that word.
I'm so sorry. So, yeah, if you've never heard of this, I'll break it down real quickly. So the big new feature that EA was touting in its marketing for BF4 was the levels change. They have this usually a big dynamic centerpiece, like a skyscraper that collapses, if you saw that trailer, or in a dam. The dam will collapse and sort of rubble will cover one part of the environment, or there's a big radar telescope that can be dented with this thing if you shoot the like support wires and it falls on it. Or let's see what else. There's one called Hainan. There's one called Flood Zone, where most of the fighting is done up on rooftops, and you can detonate. I think it is still a dam. So there's like two dam levels, and the water level rises significantly. And then, you know, aquatic vehicles, which are actually more prominent in BF4 than BF3 in any way, using them a lot more just, you know, changes the field of the map, obviously. Parasol Storm's an excellent one. So that's like a really nice, series of connected island maps. And there, you can, let's see, based on the state of the game, a storm triggers, which makes the seas all choppy. So you're having trouble getting over the waves if you're moving through them rather than laterally, parallel with them. And there's a destroyer that you can blow up the engine of or something, I think, and then it crashes on point C, changes the way C looks and feels. There's like a building and gets destroyed and kills people in there.
Some like lag problems and stuff, yeah. But I'm really impressed with whatever piece of netcode handles the choppy seas in that storm.
Oh, sure. That's, like, just, yeah, in terms of...
Just the fact that is able to stay synced and... Because you're fighting other boats, right? And you're waiting for the wave to come down so you can see them and get some shots in. And then when you get to the... Oh, I don't know the technical term. I'm not good science.
Apex.
Yeah. But that's really interesting. Just I love naval combat in Battlefield, and I love that map because I can just spend the whole time in boats. Mm-hmm. You kind of mentioned in your review that, like, those, like, the big scripted destruction events really kind of become a little bit, sick.
It's fine. Yeah.
The sort of least interesting part, maybe not least interesting, but I've noticed in all the matches I've played, I don't think I've ever seen anyone trigger one of them. Mm. Like, maybe once.
Yeah, some of them take a little bit of teamwork. I mean, on Shanghai, Siege of Shanghai, for example, there are like four support columns holding up the skyscraper. And yeah, you can, over several deaths, probably get enough C4 rockets on them, but it's usually a conscious decision of like, hey guys, the enemy has been holding C for 5 minutes, let's blow it up and collapse it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's commander mode in there, which is back from Battlefield 2142 most recently, and it's okay. It's an easy way to get points and level up, that's for sure, because you can genuinely just get points by right-clicking and saying, and like promoting your squads. It's you right-click to get points, kind of. I mean, I'm simplifying it.
It's really just like real life. Like, you put someone in control and they're just going to do whatever they want. And actually yeah. Work them.
I mean, it really makes the most sense in a clan context. It's a great tool for clans who want to have that sort of captain role, who's talking to people, who has a sense of everything, to sort of offload the thinking, the tactical thinking. That's nice. But for me, the star of Battlefield are the maps.
Right.
I talk about this in the review. I think Hainan Resort, a lot of the maps are U-shaped, actually. Siege of Shanghai is, Hainan Resort is, the dam is, there's like one or two more. And they have this nice flow where the sort of the bowl of the U is water, typically, or some portion of it is water. So you have vehicles kind of sprinting back and forth there on boats and stuff like that, jet skis. And you have this, you know, still kind of linear traversal time, clear front line, and it works out really well. The exception to that rule is probably, I don't know, I've been having some better time on it lately after I've reviewed it. Operation Locker, which is a vehicle-less,
I don't like it.
Very compact bunker map.
Yeah, it's still fun.
It's kind of a, I don't want to simplify, it does feel much more like a Call of Duty map. There's player collision on. I don't think that's something you disable in your server settings. Maybe, maybe not. But every server I played on, there are just these moments where people bottleneck at doorways, and because you cannot move through other players, including your teammates, you just die from grenades and stuff, and it's super frustrating.
And it's not why I play Battlefield, honestly.
It's a lot of people running up to a door, throwing a grenade, running back, waiting for someone to come through.
Yeah.
I do like that you can go around in that snowy sort of outdoor, which totally looks like Hoth, by the way, and basically is like, I feel like a teaser for DICE's next big game.
They're just kind of prepping the art set or something for it.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, any snowy mountain environment, I'm going
to
say, looks
like. You just
like
made
that.
Me want to play that so hard now.
How do you guys feel about the changes for the, like, getting into games through the browser and stuff like that? I have to admit that I have not.
It's been working well for me.
The way I'm playing Battlefield 4, I'm actually playing on a dedicated server with, you know, my friends from Gamers with Jobs, and I haven't been jumping between servers, so I just have that one favorited, and I jump into it. But I get the sense from people that I've talked to that they're not as happy with the interface change.
I think Battlelog is great. I like
it. Do you?
I feel very fond of it, honestly. I like that I can check into my stats while I'm at work without loading into the game and having this, you know, even if I'm windowed, it's like something sort of cumbersome. I mean, I really I do all our writing, my writing and our and editing and stuff in Google Docs. So I'm just in my browser a lot, like a lot of people, I think. But it's a reliable tool. I can with one click in my browser boot into the game and still sort of browse something in the background as it's loading. Mm-hmm. Know that the friends game I'm joining, if it's full, I'll be queued automatically. It'll let me know what position I'm in. I'll automatically be put in that person's squad, or if he's part of like an existing group of friends, be put in their squad. So it's just very seamless. And the server browser filters are great. I can sort for, like, for example, I want a server with 6 to 10 open slots only.
Right.
Show me only those servers on this map and this mode and this, like, lots of little checkboxes and customization.
I don't totally understand how it orders them sometimes.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But
the loadout,
I like that too.
The loadout menus are a little nested sometimes. Like, there are a couple actions I want to be able to do that I can't in certain contexts. But by far and large, for the purpose of Battlefield 4, it's a great system, I think. I mean, there are certainly issues for BF3 at launch, but I think they've figured them out. There are still some terrible server issues, unfortunately, with, like, you'll play close to a full match, everyone will get disconnected as the server dies, and you will not get any points at all. And if you're, like, boosting, for example, you'll lose that bonus completely and not get the time back
That happened over the last weekend. I don't think it happened to me at all last weekend.
I had it happen twice to me this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it was happening, like, every couple matches when it first launched, and I was like,
wow.
It seemed like every time I would have a brilliant round, and I'd be like, I just got, like, you know, like, 6 headshots from long range. This is great. And then
I haven't encountered that at all yet.
It's super frustrating. It's really, really aggravating that they can't dynamically sort of send that data through Battlelog. So that's my one big complaint. And,
sure,
you know, EA knows about it. They're figuring it out tomorrow, as I understand it. But, yeah, by far and large, it's a terrific multiplayer game. You know, we're about to embark on our Game of the Year conversation, sort of the early conversations about that as we tiptoe into December. And, you know, Tyler and I are already talking about, like, you know, do we like Rising Storm more as a 64-player multiplayer game? Do we like Battlefield 4 more? So, you know,
I mean, Battlefield is an interesting comparison, those two games, because similar concepts, but, you know, I mean, Rising Storm is I mean, you really are talking about a front line, and that's where all the action takes place, and I really appreciate that about it. There's no back capping, you know?
Yeah.
And,
attrition.
Battlefield is I wish, to some extent, there was a little influence from that, because, to me, the infantry game isn't very fun.
Well, the spawn and squad stuff, I mean, it is a server setting, I believe, but, I mean,
I always spawn on my squad.
Typically, your redeploy time, I mean, I think that's the difference. Your redeploy time in Battlefield is about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Seems like shorter sometimes. In Red Orchestra, depending on the server,
it can be
as much as 30, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the big difference, where one person can suddenly be 5 people. Like, as you're shooting them, they're materializing bodies. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't think that's inherently wrong.
No.
It's just a different approach.
They have, like,
style.
It's interesting that 2 64-player, you know, shooters, multiplayer shooters, can have such different feels. Even feelings.
All the feelings.
I'm sick. My words don't,
doing great, Tyler,
don't work good. Come out of mouth.
Yeah, for the listeners, they should know that, like, we have Tyler sequestered into one corner,
yes,
and we're staying as far away from him as possible.
But what do you think about spawning in vehicles? I appreciate that.
Oh,
they're
definitely.
That they're like, okay, let's not be, you know, silly about this. We know that this is, but I don't know. I kind of miss running up, like, everyone running at the beginning of every match.
I hated that part. You shouldn't.
Loved it.
You shouldn't have to, like, race your teammates to get to, like, a jeep or the tank.
At the very least, I would like spawning in a jet to spawn it on the runway. I miss taking off.
Yeah, that part I agree with.
Sure, I feel like taking off is an important skill.
I also like being able to, like, knowing that I have, like, a squad mate that's already driving, like, a tank, and I can see what's happening on the map and then jump in with him and help him out. Like,
oh, I love that.
Like, those being able to make those kind of decisions and not have to, like, run and catch up and die.
I mean, every time I'm in the spawn menu, I'm basically just looking for, and it doesn't even have to be a squad member. You can spawn into any vehicle with an open slot.
Yeah, but I don't want to help people who aren't in my squad. Come on.
I mean, that's the first thing I do is, are there any helicopters? Are there any tanks? Can I be a gunner? I don't know. One of my biggest issues with Battlefield 4 and 3 is that, like, one person who's a great jet pilot can kind of make the game less fun for me.
Sure.
Like, seriously, like, if every time I get into a helicopter, or I get into a Jeep or a tank, if they're really good, they can kind of, like, they can completely suppress, you know, my team's air efforts and even armored efforts.
I get that. But
a great
it's
helicopter
a skill.
Jeez. A great helicopter pilot usually can't do that. But if no one takes down a great jet pilot, it kind of is crazy. But I don't want to, like, you know, I mean, if they're good at it, they're good at it.
Yeah, if they're good at it, then rock on. I am not even allowed. My friends will not let me spawn into the jet now. Like, they'll yell at me on Ventrilo.
It's a really hard thing. It's the hardest vehicle to be effective in.
But you're absolutely right. Like, it is. It is disconcerting to spawn into the jet and have it already be in the air. And you're like, oh God, I gotta.
I mean, there was no.
I do miss the takeoff.
There
process.
Was never any point really to including the takeoff. I just like it.
It's just it's neat. It's there.
It's neat.
I don't know. I like Battlefield,
but I like being a helicopter pilot. That's fun. I especially like the helicopter that has, I can't remember which one it is. It has two side mounted machine guns. It has no primary weapon for the pilot because I send the camera to third person and I'm trying to spot soldiers and then orient myself such that my machine gunners can hit them. Mm-hmm. And it can be really rewarding or really frustrating, like when there are like two guys on a roof and I'm hovering right next to the roof, my machine gunner sitting there, you know, just like looking up, looking to the left. And he's going to shoot a missile. You got to shoot that guy. And that's one thing that, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not playing with friends. I'm just kind of playing pub, whatever. Mm. I don't really have a great way to control a helicopter and talk to random people.
Yep.
It's
probably for the best, though. I mean,
oh, maybe, but I would like to be able to at least tell the person in my vehicle over voice chat. Like, it'd be cool if there was kind of like local vehicle voice chat or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arm's got that, by the way.
See?
Humble brag.
But anyway. Battlefield 4, I'm having a lot of fun.
Battlefield 4.
Yeah, it's a game. I'm sick. Don't listen to anything I say.
So from there, we've got, let's see, I think we have time to talk about XCOM, X-Communist.
Enemy Within.
XCOM, where is the enemy now?
Which I keep mixing up. I keep calling it Enemy Unknown. When I mean Enemy Within, which is the expansion,
yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Which I also reviewed. It's $30 on Steam, requires the original game. Whereas it's a standalone release, I think, on consoles for about the same. It's good. It's kind of an interesting take on an expansion, but really the only take that would have made sense for XCOM, which is basically it's new content for the campaign as it is. So everything from the original campaign, including that kind of weird DLC that I didn't really like.
Slingshot.
Yeah, that adds like three missions and this kind of subplot about a triad gang member who joins you. So you're playing through all that original content plus new maps, new council missions, a new kind of mission against a human enemy, this Terror Cell Exalt, which I really like because I think fighting humans is inherently more interesting than fighting aliens, at least in XCOM, because they act more like you. And, you know, they have snipers, they have heavies. They'll take cover, they'll use smoke, they'll heal themselves. It you never really know on the next turn, are they going to take a shot or are they going to reposition to try to flank or are they going to back up and heal? So I like that unpredictability. There are a couple new alien types. Seekers are kind of cool looking, but they're pretty you know, it's a pretty
they're not as terrifying as I thought they were going to be.
No,
when we wrote that story a few months ago for the magazine and talked about the Seeker, like the way they were designed sounded really terrifying and difficult to get past.
No, they're not a
problem. They ended up being a lot easier, like to the point where I haven't even.
I actually think they're the easiest alien to deal with.
Yeah,
they only appear in groups of two. They immediately cloak, and then 1 to 2 turns later, they will sort of rematerialize within one tile, each of them, of another soldier. And if you don't kill them before the end of that, before the end of its turn, it will start strangling.
Well, even I mean, they'll start strangling you right then, yeah. And like even if you kill them by the end of that turn, like you lose, you know, with the equivalent of a lot of action points for the guy that was strangled, the squaddy that was strangled.
How do you know it's not a hug?
It might be a hug.
It could be a welcoming, like, tradition for their people.
But it incapacitates a soldier for one turn and does 2 or 3 damage or something.
But here's my point, right? I would never waste an inventory slot on the gear that you can develop that, like, stops them.
Oh, yeah, no.
I would never bother.
That's not important.
Because there are so many other... There are so many other useful pieces of gear you can take,
like,
and that's something I like about Enemy Within is that you have a lot more choices about stuff like that, but like, that choice was too
easy. I think 3 sectoids is more dangerous than 2 seekers, and sectoids, if you haven't played, are sort of the basic lowest level alien. There's all kinds of new equipment. You have a gas grenade, needle grenade. I don't know. You also have like a ghost grenade, which can turn your squad members invisible.
What happens if you throw a ghost grenade at a ghost from Call of Duty?
If you throw it at your dad.
Dad, look out! Son, no.
Yeah.
Ghost.
I don't know. I mean...
Swayze.
Ultimately, like, it's kind of funny to me how XCOM tries to get you not to use explosives. Mm-hmm. Especially in the early game, it tells you, you know, your scientist is constantly popping in being like, Commander... You can't. If we keep using explosives, we'll destroy valuable equipment. And in a way, it is because like the frag grenades are one of the best things that you should probably equip all your soldiers with. Like,
oh yeah,
the needle grenades don't work that well.
It's an easy way to level up.
Smoke grenades are sometimes useful in specific situations, but
frag grenades are always useful.
But
and they're worth that UFO power source.
I think
that
the reason frag grenades are so much more powerful. Is that smoke grenades, you're still dealing with percentages. You're hoping, maybe my soldier doesn't get hit if I put him in smoke. A frag grenade always does 3 damage, and so it's a sure thing.
Unless you suck at aiming.
Unless you miss, but I've never missed a frag grenade throw.
I was playing 2 nights ago.
It gives you a percent shot, so...
Oh, really?
But even if it goes a little off in one direction, it's got a pretty big radius. Mm. So I don't know. Rockets and frag grenades, to me, they are sure things...
I've definitely missed rockets, and it's been scary and sad.
That is bad news.
Yeah. I was playing 2 nights ago, and you, Evan,
hello.
were in my squad, and you were up above.
I didn't sign up for this.
In my game, you did.
Oh, God. Because
I like giving you guys orders. And you were up above, like a level above where the enemy was. Like there were 2 floaters down below you, and they were firing at you, and you had to reload your gun or waste your turn, but you had a frag grenade, and so it's... I set it up so that you basically kind of just lulled rolled the frag down, landed right nicely between them, and they blew up, and you were the hero of the day.
Oh, good.
Then
good
the next mission, you died.
Oh, God.
Aww.
Which is still fun about XCOM.
Evan died. Yeah, the permadeath. And, of course, now, I mean, one of the things I like the most about it is that you have even more reason to not want your soldiers to die because you've probably spent a lot of meld, which is a... new resource you can get in the basic abduction site and UFO missions. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an added secondary objective to those missions to go find it before the turn counter runs out. And you can use that to apply gene mods to your soldiers or, I guess, basically meld their bones to metal. And then put them into giant mech suits.
Used to augment them, yeah. And I don't know, I can't remember if you talked about this much or not, but I actually really love how the inclusion of this new resource on the maps propels you through the map. And like where I used to be very cautious in Enemy Unknown, and I would just kind of methodically work my way through a map. Now, because those meld canisters have a timer on them when you discover them, and they could they, you know, if you don't get to them in enough time, you can't collect them. Like, I'm being more reckless in the choices that I'm making.
I just got a bunch of meld early on in the easier missions, and then kind of stopped worrying about it. Because, I mean, actually, that one of my criticisms was that meld seems like an attempt to fix a fundamental problem with those missions, which is that to move forward is reckless, and it's disadvantageous to you, because if you spot enemies, it activates them. They get a free movement turn.
Right.
And if you spot two enemy groups at once because you spread out and got a lot of line of sight, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. You want to encounter them one at a time, right? That's easier. And to me, meld is like, I know it's just meant to appear to all be happening by chance, but as a player, you figure this out, right? And then so my strategy kind of becomes more manipulative of the game mechanics than it is like, I'm going to put my sniper on the roof because she's a sniper and she should go on the roof, which is more fun to me. But then when I realize, like, I don't really want line of sight of the whole map, that's a bad move. So I don't think meld totally fixes that sort of fundamental issue that I have with it.
Totally fixed it.
I mean,
for me.
It's an incentive to get out of your comfort zone, and but it's also not present on every mission. And I mean, like escort missions, for example,
right?
You can still just move one square at a time,
right?
Yeah, which when I'm really want to protect
I
do that. And
me too.
Like, I think a lot of players will, you know, figure out exactly sort of the flowchart way to get through something, and that's not very fun. But I'm not going to put my soldiers at risk, to be honest, and, you know, so except, you know, maybe later on I get a little crazy, because I mean, I like telling stories, right? And I want to use my sniper like a sniper,
right?
So I do. But anyway, the mech soldiers and the gene mods,
here you go.
The gene mods are cool. Stuff like, I have a sniper who can jump onto rooftops. That is pretty neat. Some of them just,
how is it different from the grappling hook suit thing?
Not,
you don't have to wear the suit.
Yeah.
So like you could put your sniper in like the bigger Titan suit if you needed to. So, or you get access to that much sooner than you would with the spider suit or whatever.
I was gonna say instead of it being a belt, it's just like in your stomach.
It's
your
in
legs.
Your calves.
Your giant legs. I mean, a lot of them are stat bonuses, some of them do. You can have a second heart. I like if you're it's like you can like Surgeon Simulator 2013 in a second.
Like
heart.
A Wookiee?
And so
like
that has an
Lord.
Interesting effect.
Is there a mini game?
No. I wish there was a. I made that joke in the print version of the review.
Oh, nice.
But it if your soldier reaches zero health, they will bleed out, and the bleed out timer is increased by two turns instead of dying.
Because your hearts are beating faster.
Because they have
you
two
have a
hearts.
Second heart.
Yeah,
first heart failed, but the second heart can keep you alive.
They
a
don't
longer.
All make sense.
I'm not sure if Firaxis consulted a doctor.
No. No.
They played a lot of Surgeon Sim 2013 to say, well, this is probably how it could work.
And some of the stat sort of bonuses, like hyperreactive pupils, means if you miss a shot, you'll get a plus 10 aim bonus on your next shot. I'm not sure how one's pupils...
Sounds like squinting to me.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like they should go to an optometrist.
Genetic squinting.
If they're missing that many shots to begin with.
How do you feel about the mech suits then?
Better than... There's like, now that I think about it even more, I really like the gene mods because, like, I just started, like, after messing with my soldier's DNA, I kind of became even more attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
The mech soldiers... In a way, you become a little bit less attached.
It's funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the person's DNA, just like, I really care about you.
Yeah, I feel like I've played God in some way. Like, I. The mech soldiers kind of become, I mean, you have to augment a soldier, which replaces most of them with metal, their limbs at least. And then, secondarily, you have to build a mech suit for them. And you can upgrade the mech suits. You make sort of these binary choices of what kind of a piece of equipment you want along the way. And the equipment is like, I think I like the mechs more because you play them differently. You know, I mean, the gene mods, I'm giving my sniper, who I already use as a sniper,
more benefits,
an aim
as a
bonus
sniper.
And the ability to jump to rooftops, which is where I was going to put her anyway.
But the mech suit really changes that class.
Well, yeah.
It's its own class.
It is its own class, and they can't use cover because they're too big. So it is a weird feeling to just send my, just to have them go stand in the front, you know, and not even worry about cover. It's a different way to play.
Until you turn them into cover, which is cool.
It is cool. There is an ability where you can turn them into like a hard point that people can, your other guys can take cover.
That was so cool. I discovered that last night. And I was just like, oh, and then he died.
I like the flamethrower. It's this sort of like free aiming cone of damage that also panics every enemy, which has saved my ass a few times.
Panicking a muton is cool.
Yeah.
I'll never get tired of that.
Really good when it comes to, what are they called? Little spider dudes that turn you into zombies. Crystallids, yeah. Really useful because they tend to come in packs. So burning them up is nice. You can get a grenade launcher. You can get... They have a lot of, like, cover-destroying kind of, like, set damage things. Like, there's this, like... I can't remember what this one's called, but I can sort of, like, shoot this blast that will destroy cover and do...
Two damage,
I think, yeah. Which I...
You have two choices when you first get your
those aren't very interesting.
Suit. Yeah. They get more interesting later on. Yeah. But punching a sectoid through a wall felt good, though.
Yes. You can get a giant, super powerful arm that you can punch out
ten
cover.
10 out of 10.
Or punch within one tile. That's pretty great. So, yeah, so the mechs, you're going to play them... you play them differently, and that's... That's what I like about them, and it's good because they're not invincible. You know, they have a lot of health, but
they'll still die.
In some respect, like you have it out there, out of cover, going point to protect your team, but your entire team is also there to protect your mechs because you would rather a stupid unaugmented vanilla human die than your mech, right?
Well, obviously,
right. Yeah, they're not important.
I mean, they're genetically superior.
Like sometimes I will throw rookies in there just to like two rookies just to shadow the mech, and it's like if it comes down to it, you're dying, not the mech.
Learn from RoboCop. Yeah. Did you find the beginning of the game to be harder than Enemy Unknown?
No.
It could just be the two games that I've started of Enemy Within so far. That it's just felt to me like things accelerate much, much more quickly. You might have just gotten unlucky. I thought that on the first game, and I lost pretty much all of my soldiers, so I started a new game. But I kind of felt like in both scenarios, like things would escalate much, much faster than I remember. I was encountering enemies faster than before. Things were just tougher, and I was also getting more choices, but if I started devoting myself towards, like, okay, I'm seriously going to do some mech development, like, that was going to set me behind in some other research areas.
I mean, that is one thing. You get those choices pretty quick.
Yeah.
You can start collecting meld and building the gene lab and all that pretty quickly, and just the sheer number of, like, things you need to deal with at XCOM HQ is another thing I mentioned in the review is... I don't think it could withstand any more complexity. You need this global satellite network. You need a hangar with a fleet of interceptors to take down UFOs. You've got to make sure, you have enough healthy soldiers in your roster and do it using gene mods and augmenting also takes them out of rotation for like five days, which is a while to take. Generally, you're augmenting your best soldiers, right? So you have to take them out for probably two missions to do it.
Yeah, you end up falling into a Terra mission. You're there with all rookies. And
yeah,
you hope that the green backs can pull
through.
They'll
be fine.
Yeah,
but it feels
it's
like
a lot to take care of.
One of my criticisms of at least when I did my big 30-hour playthrough of Enemy Unknown, and granted I was also playing with the tutorial at the beginning, which kind of slows things down for the first maybe hour or so of that game, but I never felt like I had to make a lot of tough decisions. Until maybe near the end, like the difficulty felt like it was more in the strategic actual battle than it was in like deciding what resource I wanted to go in, research I wanted to do or engineering. Here in Enemy Within, like you have a lot of those choices, you need to make them, and going one way or another is going to cost you. There are consequences.
Yeah, I mean,
I dig that.
I'm probably going to play through it again, classic hardcore, and I may just not build the gene lab. As much as I like playing with it and it adds a certain, adds character to my characters and adds to their story, I think it's more important to have mechs. But because you will fight mechtoids, which are sectoids in mechs. Mm-hmm. And you're fighting Exalt, like I said, the Terra organization. And they're pretty tough. Although something I was talking to our old reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, at IGN about is in the later game, you can get kind of crazy powerful, even on harder difficulties.
Right.
To the point that I didn't experience this as much because Dan's really freaking good at strategy games, but he found it too easy near the end. But that's where I kind of like, I enjoy just kind of continuing to tell the story of my soldiers. And you can always challenge yourself, you know, send a team of all rookies out on a like big council mission or something.
Certainly.
Anyway, we really like it as an expansion.
Yeah.
So, cool.
Yeah, I'm just glad to have another reason to play XCOM again.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's enough to go back in and play one or two campaigns through again.
I mean, more and more, it just reinforces, you know, booting up again. It's absolutely one of my favorite games in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
That's since I've been a PC gamer. I think the level design is really underrated. The destructibility of everything is captured so with such fidelity that if a rocket goes here or 5 feet to the right, it's going to change the environment in a different way. Everything breaks like it's made of crackers, basically. And just the color palette of everything has this like wonderfully authentic but toy-like feel, like just slightly stylized.
Right.
I think it's the perfect balance.
Yeah, the art's great.
I mean, you really feel like it's the experience of moving action figures across this beautifully detailed like board diorama. Mm-hmm. And the art just really does it for me. I do wish there were more customization options because...
Yeah, the characters all look the same.
It is nice to have the new languages, though. Big, not everybody speaks English now, at least.
It is nice.
Oh, nice.
Big,
oh, nice,
big meaty faces. Right. And
the best of the best that the world has to offer, and apparently they're all like meatheads.
But it's funny, like if you flip through their head options, like I can tell that something's changing when I see the next one, but I'm not really sure in what way.
You want like the Saints Row 4 character customization in XCOM. You want to be able to make like, you know, crazy clown hair and stuff.
It's a great game for it.
I just want like different body types. I mean, why does everyone have to be a linebacker?
Yeah,
that's the best of the best. That's.
But I mean,
they're not going to let me be on XCOM. Like, they're not going to let some roly-poly dude show up and like let me pilot the mech suit.
I don't necessarily want crazy Saints Row stuff, but yeah, I mean, with a game that, like, as we all talk about, it really is about becoming attached to your soldiers, mourning their death.
Exactly.
It would be easier to become attached to them if I could kind of make them look like what I wanted to.
I'm highly perfectionistic about the nationalities and whatnot. Where like. Like I'll get in my mind that I want this person in my real life, say it's Tyler, to be a sniper. And if after the first mission he's I'm sorry, I'm thinking about Battlefield. He's support and the nationality I don't like. Like ideally you're a Canadian sniper, like because that's your actual that's perfect alignment for me.
I don't worry about nationality too much when it comes to naming.
I re-rolled my campaign 16 times to get the starting nationality and genders I wanted for that first mission.
Wow.
I know.
That's like some Wizardry 7 level shit.
It's ridiculous. There's probably going to be a save editor that allows me to...
It would be kind of nice if that were an option. I mean, I think they want there to be some... You know, they want you to have to randomly encounter sort of different nationalities, and the soldiers is sort of like this deck of card system that chooses what specialization they get. But
right.
I don't know. In a game about customizing your soldiers, I don't see why I can't flip someone from American to Japanese and just do that.
It would mean a lot. I mean, I'm just taking their passport, no big deal.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you're a global alien fighting force. I think you can get a new passport issued.
Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything else we want to talk about before we say goodbye for this week, gentlemen?
There's a lot that we can still talk about, but we could save that for the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. We'll just remind people to go check out the Large Pixel Collider. Go to PCGamer.com.
/LPC.
Or is it LPC.PCGamer.com?
Those URLs.
Fantastic.
Thank you there, Tyler Wilde.
Fantastic. And you can read all about the components with some hilarious writing by Evan.
Oh, you too.
And watch our video in which we are goofy. And
in which we take building the most powerful gaming PC known to mankind very seriously.
Very, very serious.
Where we have our serious business faces on.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, again, this project is just the beginning of a bunch of cool stuff we're going to be doing next year. We're going to be expanding. We'll be, like XCOM, growing as an organization, recruiting new soldiers into the PC Gamer Empire.
genetically modifying some of them.
A few, you know, cutting off some of their arms and strapping them into exoskeletons.
And then we're going to fight aliens.
I guess it's an endoskeleton, actually. I'm sorry.
Is it?
It's an endoskeleton.
Okay.
Why wouldn't it be exo?
Exo's in your body, right?
I thought endo is in your body.
Oh, yeah.
I think exo's out of your body.
I think you're... What, oh, we're talking about, I'm what sorry. We're talking about is robocopping people.
Man, I'm tired. I'm sorry.
Me too.
Prefixes science. Anyway, yeah, Large Pixel Collider guys really would love for you to check it out. It has its own Twitter account. It's sentient, so
Pixel Collider.
We figured Pixel Collider. We'd allow it to speak on the internet at Pixel Collider.
It demanded that we get out of its way so it could communicate with you directly. And
yes,
frankly, we can't tell our robot overlord masters no.
Yeah, I mean, kind of just imagine us as a team of butlers for this thing now. It's effectively running PC Gamer. We've handed over the controls. Logan's blood is circulating through its water cooling system, along with other vampire blood. I don't know where I'm going with this. Just go to the website. Thanks for listening, guys. We're so glad to be back. Again, we're so sorry for the delay, but it was for good reasons, to doing cool stuff for you and your friends, which we'll continue to do. And we'll talk to you next week again for 366. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, really good.
Dunsies.
That's good.